And finally, meeting. Richard Strauss dismissed a lot of his early music, not particularly these songs I'm bringing on, but the serenades and so on, as nothing more than the respectable work of a music student. Well, some music student. Here's Frederica von Stadler returning to stage now with Martin Katz, and we'll hear these three love songs by Richard Strauss.
July 5th, 87.
Thank you.
the three songs of Richard Strauss, sung by mezzo-soprano Friederike von Stade, Martin Katz, her accompanist. Those songs she really brought out and brought us the emotion, and the voice is very, very flexible now. And I think she was a bit perhaps tight at the beginning with the songs that she sang at the beginning, but she's certainly coming along now. I don't know if any of you noticed, just before she began the recital, before she sang the songs by Fauré, I told you she was a stunning woman, and when she walked on stage and she was dressed in this beautiful black gown with and canary yellow, very stunning on stage, it prompted one of the members of the audience to say, "I love your gown," out loud, and I think I heard somebody reply, "I do too," and I think she was really taken aback, as you would be as you're coming out to sing a recital, and she joked, "I think I won't bother to sing." That's the personality of the singer that I mentioned earlier when we started this recital. Now, Friederike von Stade and Martin Katz move to what I think might be one of the highlights of this program, at least in the eyes of some of the people looking at the program, two very moving and very spectacular operatic arias by Rossini, Assisa a pie d'un salice from Otello and Tanti effetti from La Donna del Lago. The first is what they normally call Desdemona's Willow Song from Otello. "O you, sweet instrument of sorrow, I take you up again and unite in one sad song, the sighs of Isola, with my own weeping. Well, the second aria by Rossini is the grand finale, and it is grand, for the opera La Donna del Lago, Elena's rondo finale, Tanti effetti. It's an expressive and also a really fiery song of both joy and love. Marilyn Horne considered this one of her favorite arias. As a matter of fact, she often inserted this aria in what is known as the lesson scene in The Barber of Seville, where the star by tradition sings an aria that she really enjoys as her favorite in that lesson, as a lesson scene in The Barber of Seville. Well, here's Friederike von Stade and Martin Katz again on stage at Roy Thomson Hall for these two arias by Rossini. Narcissa Pierum Salice from Otello by Rossini. The next is from the opera La Donna del Lago, Tanti Affetti, sung by Frederica von Stadler. That's a soprano with Martin Katz at the piano. Thank you. ecstatic applause for Federica Bunstada, the mezzo-soprano, our guest on Command Performance, who, with Martin Katz at the piano, have just performed Tanti Affetti, the finale from the opera La Donna del Lago by Rossini. Fiendishly difficult leaps, and splendidly performed by Federica Bunstada, with Martin Katz, who I haven't said very much about in this recital, very strong in accompaniment. Here she is back on stage. Listen to some songs by Francis Poulenc, then four songs from The Auvergne by Cantaloube, and then the three cabaret songs by Arnold Schoenberg. So, quite Bunstada about her life and her career. She began by talking about whether or not Federica Bunstada thought she had difficulty balancing her career and choosing what direction she should take.
No, I haven't reflected on it. I think as opportunities come up, I've had about the best advice anyone could have in a profession. Starting, number one, with my husband Peter, who is also my voice teacher. We both worked with this wonderful Mr. Engelberg, who died couple of years ago, and Peter has this fantastic ear, and he has also an understanding of how we were originally trained. And his advice is, I mean, it's what I've really based my career on, along with Matthew Epstein, who is originally my manager and now has sort of gotten out of the management field, so that, but he's always, as a friend, there for one, and enormously helpful. And he began as a fan of opera and has not given up his enthusiasm and love for singers and terrific knowledge of it and what one should sing and what one should not sing. And I remember even when I was first at the Met going to ask Mr. Bing, Sir Rudolph, for some advice, and he said, no, you're too young to do that. And I just followed the advice. I thought, these people know more than I do, and if I listen to them, I'm probably better off, you know. And I think part of the job of being a professional is knowing what you can't do. And you have to take some risks, you know, you're going to make some mistakes. I don't have a standard kind of voice that can just sit in an opera house and do all the mezzo roles. It's not a dramatic mezzo, so I could never sing Verdi and Wagner. So I've always had to skip around, and then when interesting opportunities come up, I'm game for them. If I feel I can sing the music, like this Sonnambula was just out of the blue, but it was Terry McEwen, and Terry spent his life in music, and he spent his life in music, and he still loves it, and he still loves singers. I mean, and that's the key to it, because we're an impossible bunch. and anybody that can know us and understand us and still love us, you have to go along with them.
When did you discover that you were a mezzo-soprano?
Oh, I don't know. When I first started singing and had my first lessons, I'd always sung terribly low as a kid, you know. And then I remember my first lesson with this wonderful man, Mr. Engelberg, I sang a high C and promptly passed out. I guess I hadn't felt those kind of vibrations in my head. And I think it just what is more the nature of my voice. It's just centered a little bit lower than a soprano voice.
Have you ever been tempted, as some other mezzo-sopranos have been, to move out of the mezzo range?
No, I've done enough roles that are soprano roles, really. And I'm the type of mezzo that really is very much in between anyway, and so that I haven't adhered as closely with the label of mezzo-soprano. I mean, most of the songs I do actually are in the soprano keys, and a lot of roles are the type of roles that really mezzos and sopranos share, Cherubino and Octavian and the Componiste and Cenerentola. Well, Cenerentola has more of a mezzo stamp on it, as does Rosina, but not really. I mean, Rosina, a soprano might add one or two higher ornaments, but basically the role remains the same. Cendrillon is really called a soprano role. I've not moved into the Mimi and Traviata, and although last year I did Sonnambula at San Francisco Opera, but in a very special version, in a version that was it was not a Malibran version, it was a Flicka version, but it was done in keys that were comfortable for me, which I thought was utter sacrilege until I was sort of informed by a musicologist that in its day it was such a beautiful piece that it was carried under everybody's arm in whatever keys they wanted, and that the keys don't really affect the piece the way they might in another work, that everything can be quite simply organized around them. So I haven't, you know, I'm not planning Norma for next year or anything so bold, but just of the nature, and I do Mélisande, which is a soprano role, but I'm not really a soprano. I think it's very hard to label voices and have them, because mezzo-soprano probably in this day and age doesn't mean exactly what it meant before.
Is there anything in your repertoire that is especially you, I mean, is something that you have particularly wanted to do, a passion that you have in particular?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I'm thinking off the top of my head because I've not contemplated it. I don't know. I guess I love honesty in music. I love... that's why I love opera so much. I feel that most of the characters that one performs are so honestly what they are. And I feel that that's so well circumscribed or so well defined by the music. I mean, if I were to pick a character that I felt was really the closest to my own sort of nature, I'd have to say, even though it's a boy, I'd have to say Cherubino, because I, with the good fortune I've had in my career, I feel that way about it. I feel like Cherubino. I feel, you know, still slightly stage struck and still enormously grateful to people around me for what they have given me, and still foolish enough to feel that young about it.
Thank you.
Alfonso Pugh from The Marriage of Figaro by Mozart with Federico von Stade in a recording. In one of the roles, Cherubino, one of the trouser roles, as they call them, that a tall, slender mezzo-soprano like Federico von Stade would be, I think, a natural in. You're listening to Command Performance on CBC Stereo from Roy Thomson Hall, a recital by Federico von Stade and pianist Martin Katz. And Marian Fraser continued her talk with Federico von Stade by asking if she had one all-encompassing passion or goal in music.
I don't know. I don't think I have one goal. I think at this point, you know, when you're beginning, it's all new experiences. It's sort of like going to college. And then once you've gathered all this information, and your instinct is to sort of put it back out. You know, I really am thrilled by, not that I'm, you know, veteran quite yet, but I'm thrilled to see the younger people come along. I can't help but getting this absolutely chill down my spine when I hear a beautiful voice, to know what's ahead of me, to hope that music affords them the same kind of life it's afforded me, not that there haven't been pitfalls and lots of tears and gnashing of teeth. There are, I mean, it's natural in any career, but I just hope that they can have that feeling. Peter and I, my husband, we went to see Amadeus the other night in Philadelphia where we were working. I felt like a fly around the room after seeing this. It sounds so silly because it was so, the score was so beautiful. And I thought, you know, most people in their lifetime maybe sit in an opera house or a concert hall, maybe twice a year and hear Mozart, or they turn on the radio, unless they're avid music fans or in the business. And we get to spend months of our lives listening to Mozart. And it's so lucky to spend your life standing in front of an orchestra, to be paid to do that, to not just for the travel, because we sort of travel like hermits anyway, you know. Did you see the Louvre? And I was in my hotel room worrying about the performance. And to colleagues, the fun that you have with your colleagues is, I mean, it must be like being part of a team in a sport. There's a camaraderie and a humor, and I mean, sure, there are egos. There's big egos, but they're also based on a very fragile instrument. And no matter who they are, not Luciano or anybody, they all have that little fragile corner, you know, that is fragile. It's like glass, and it exists for everybody. There's never a moment when you sit on your laurels, and I don't think in any business, in any part of the performing arts, but especially not us, and it sort of unites one. It's why I could never judge a contest, and I probably could never teach, is because I feel so strongly about everybody trying to be part of it, and I don't feel you can ever say never, because the human willpower can overcome even a natural instrument, what might be a natural instrument.
When I was growing up, I don't think I ever would have heard Cantaloupe or Schoenberg or any of those things, but now, when you go to concerts, that seems to be what you hear. Do you think there's a sort of renaissance of that kind of music?
Well, yes. I mean, I think American singers, first of all, will sing anything. You know, if you go to France, in Paris, most of the recitals that you will hear, even with French singers, will be all Schubert and Schumann, which is fantastic, but they have this absolute gold mine of their own music, and they're very often the last people to sing it. It's usually the Americans that go and sing Poulenc and Fauré and Debussy and Duparc. I identify an awful lot with French music because I lived in France and I just happen to adore it. It just says something to me, you know. I'm less comfortable in German, though becoming more comfortable. And so I don't sing as much Schubert and Schumann, although I just love it, but I think it's out of an awe and a respect for it that I don't feel I'm not totally at home with the language, and I feel I need to be in order to